The ongoing COVID crisis and its impact on healthcare workers. It was bad enough at the beginning of the pandemic, healthcare workers armed with insufficient knowledge and protection, having to care for an onslaught of COVID-19 patients. Now, the situation has shifted. Just as everyone thought the pandemic was receding, a rapid rise in COVID cases has forced healthcare workers to go into high gear again. I'm Cindy Hahn. We'll talk with hospital staff about how this latest surge in cases is testing their limits, with staff shortages, tensions over unvaccinated patients and coworkers, and others with non-COVID medical needs getting sidelined. There's also the fear of another winter surge adding to the existing strain and stress. We'll learn about resources and support to help healthcare workers. Main Calling is next, but first, this news update. Welcome to Main Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. After a dramatic surge, COVID cases may be inching downward again in Maine, but hospitals are still seeing high numbers of patients. We'll talk with hospital staff about how they're doing at this stage of the pandemic, and we'll hear about ways for them to cope with the strain of being on the front line. Joining me, Christine Hine. She's an emergency physician and associate director of emergency services and chief wellness officer at Maine Medical Center. And Katie Weymouth is a registered nurse in the telemetry unit at Northern Light Mercy Hospital. We invite your questions and comments. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And thank you both for being here. I know you're very busy, especially with the pandemic. And Christine, I'll just start with you because you have the perspective of both being in the ER as well as being the person who's in charge of wellness at Maine Medical Center. So what is your take on how physicians and nurses and everybody is doing at this stage in the pandemic?
Thank you very much for having me here today. I appreciate the chance to be part of this panel. I usually try to start out with something positive, but I have to be in the spirit of being honest. I have to say that it's been exhausting and a bit unrelenting at times, managing the surge that we've seen in patients with COVID, as well as the downstream impact on our ability to provide care for other patients with non-COVID related illness. It's been extremely challenging. And seeing patients continually be separated from their family and loved ones at the door of the hospital is really adds insult to injury in those circumstances, because having their loved ones at the bedside is really important for them.
So those precautions are still in place like they were at the beginning of the pandemic, where you cannot have somebody there with you if you are a COVID patient?
Both if you are a COVID patient and also if you are a non-COVID patient, because of the need to keep numbers low in the hospital in terms of just the number of people that are passing through the hospital. So, yeah, basically at this point, only people, children or patients who have an inability to communicate for themselves, or some of our older patients with dementia or other illnesses, we can make exceptions to have family and or a friend at the bedside, but that's kind of it at this point.
And you mentioned how it's this feeling of unrelentingness, or whatever the word would be for that. How does this compare with the beginning of the pandemic, when it was all new and didn't know what was going on, and it was a different sort of situation that you were looking at?
Well, I think it's very different because we have an effective prevention strategy now. And so, you know, we're 18 or 19 months into this pandemic in the US, and we know that there's a way to prevent patients from becoming severely ill with COVID. And so it drives a level of distress, I think, in our healthcare teams to still be seeing such high numbers and to know the impact that's having on everyone, both on individual families, as well as our communities and our ability to really take care of people in the way that we were trained to do so.
Katie,
so it feels very different.
Yeah, I want to hear what Katie has to say. That Katie, you're a nurse in the telemetry unit. Can you first tell us what telemetry means?
Sure. And I'd also like to say thank you for having me on the show. Great opportunity to share what it is from a nursing perspective and all that we're experiencing with COVID right now. Telemetry is a cardiac unit. We monitor patients' cardiac status on their own monitor and anything that comes with that. I think that it certainly is tough caring for patients with underlying health issues and then COVID all on top of it. I think Christine did a great job explaining how stressful it can be and how hard it is right now as a second time around with COVID.
Yeah. Can you kind of take us step by step through a typical day? I'm sure you don't have typical days, but at least what it is that you have to juggle when you're caring for patients. What does that look like?
Oops, we can't hear you, Cindy.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm wondering if our audio, is that better? Are you able to hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. So I just wanted to know if you could sort of take us step by step through a typical day and talk about what is it like? What are you doing to juggle all the things you have to do, and what kind of patients are you helping to care for?
Sure. So on our floor at Mercy Hospital, we always start our day off as a group with both night shift and day shift. I do work day shift, overviewing all of our patients on the floor, outlining any sort of safety issues, health issues that may be a concern throughout the day. And then we tackle our patient assignments. Usually for me, I take care of 3 to 4, sometimes 5 patients a day. However, it may be appropriate with their acuities to still be able to provide safe care. And I just jump right in. Anything that needs immediate addressing, I'll go see those patients first. And then we assess them, we take their vital signs and monitor those all day. It's always a big med pass in the morning. And sometimes it doesn't go as planned. And that's part of nursing is, you know, juggling and prioritizing and, you know, addressing things that need to be done first. When we take care of COVID patients, of course, they are in their own room. All of our patients actually are in their own rooms, but they're in their own rooms behind a closed door with a loud negative pressure machine blowing. And usually it's just me in there with them. So it's making sure they don't need anything else before I leave the room, having all their needs addressed, certainly making sure they're doing okay, both physically and mentally, and kind of just going step by step and taking the day as it goes.
And for you, if they're COVID patients or even if they're not, is it still fully you're in all this protective gear? Is that a big part of it, the physical parts that you have to deal with?
Sure. So every day we are always in just a mask and goggles. And then if we're in a COVID room, we're wearing our goggles, an N95 or a PAPR, depending on what the nurse wears, a gown and gloves. So certainly it can be a lot if you're in that room for a long period of time. It is definitely exhausting. But we work with great members of our team and we all help each other out. So that's also very helpful too. If we need anything while we're in those rooms, we reach out, and that way we don't have to go back and forth so many times, which definitely helps with stress and exhaustion as well.
Right. So some of that is the actual physical exhaustion. What about emotionally? What stresses you out throughout this whole caring process?
It's very unpredictable some days. You don't know what you're walking into. I always told myself and have told others that you certainly can't pour from an empty cup. So you got to take care of yourself first before you can take care of others. And I think that's something that's really important for all members of the healthcare team right now while we're struggling with these difficult times, you know, dealing with the stress, maybe some losses, some bad days. But we certainly find positive ways to deal with difficult situations and work as a team.
Well, that's a good attitude. I actually heard a term for this called empathy fatigue. Christine, have you heard that? And how, I guess it's referring to just simply being drained from caring for and caring about patients.
Yes, that's a very well described term. Another way to put it is compassion fatigue. It's a component of burnout. And we were seeing really high levels of burnout in healthcare workers prior to the pandemic. And so this has absolutely exacerbated that. In areas that measure their burnout rates across the country, we've seen pretty consistent, significant upticks. And the the reason this matters, there's several reasons, honestly. The first is that patients receive better care when they're being cared for by a team that is not suffering from compassion fatigue. They're more likely to follow the advice of their care team members if they have that connection, emotional connection with their providers. And also it takes a significant toll on the healthcare worker themselves. And we know that burnout is a risk factor for the development of mental illness, such as depression and anxiety. And it's also a component and a significant risk factor for why people leave medicine altogether. People who are burnt out are twice as likely to leave medicine in the next 2 years versus their colleagues who aren't. So when we are using words and understanding that there's components of our job right now that are driving compassion fatigue and burnout, it becomes really a significant public health concern.
And are you seeing people leaving because they just are just too far burnt out?
Yes. Yes, we absolutely have seen that. It's really another thing that drives a level of distress. I mean, you know, you can't drive anywhere right now without seeing help wanted signs in any sector of the world. And healthcare providers are not immune to that and are probably, along with some other occupations and professions, we're probably at increased risk of that right now because of the day in and day in, day out nature of what we're seeing and what we're doing.
So what can healthcare workers do if they're just feeling mentally, emotionally pushed to the limit right now?
Well, you know, that's kind of varies based on where you're practicing and where you are. It depends on how well advanced your organization is in understanding the science behind burnout and the science of well-being. There's many places that have set up programs to help with that, and many of which existed before the pandemic and are certainly seeing increased usage now. The idea of just simply acknowledging what the experience is really powerful in terms of bringing people together and creating connections between groups of folks who are distressed by their daily, responsibilities, but also creating space for people to kind of intentionally seek joy in their lives, whether it's through connections with colleagues or outside of work with family and friends. And then there's specific programs like peer support programs or other more advanced programs that can be offered that can actually have a significant impact in our ability to not just tolerate this, but really kind of learn and grow and thrive from it so that we can come back more refreshed and able to provide better care for our patients.
And Katie, you mentioned that just the support of colleagues as being part of it. Are there any other tools you use just to get through a day or recover from a day at work that keep you going and not feeling just completely fried?
I think that taking time while you got to take a lunch when you're at work, you have to take time for yourself, because if you don't take a break, that's a long 12-hour stretch of caring for people without caring for yourselves. And then really utilizing your time off to do things that make you happy. As simple as that.
Any examples for you? What works?
I enjoy going to the gym. I enjoy spending time with my friends and family, reading a book, anything to try and keep my mind outside of anything that's in the hospital.
Sure. And Katie, also, we know that many healthcare workers right now are facing the added strain of the question of vaccine mandates. Some of your colleagues vaccinated, some not. And is that something that I would think would cause an added strain between colleagues, between people who've been working alongside each other and maybe differ in their points of view? Are you seeing that kind of added difficulty in your job?
Personally, I am not. I'm sure maybe Christine could answer a little bit differently, but I do know that myself and my team, we definitely support vaccination, and we know that it's the safest way to care for our community.
Okay, so you fortunately haven't had to get in any arguments with your colleagues over that issue then, right?
I personally have not.
Okay. No. And Christine, are you seeing that that's another thing taking its toll, this added element of different philosophies towards the vaccine among colleagues that maybe worked together for decades?
I haven't had any negative experiences or interactions with my colleagues because of that. I have to say, working in the emergency department, most of us were running to the Dana Center where we received our vaccine on the days that it was available to us. There was a real sense of enthusiasm and excitement about the opportunity to be vaccinated. The vast majority of our staff at Maine Medical Center are vaccinated, and so I haven't been involved in any negative interactions. The vaccine mandate has increased the vaccination rate, and of course, there are people who have concerns and have been able to discuss that with their teams. And I've heard really encouraging stories about specific individuals who did have concerns, who were, after a discussion, were able to make the choice that professionally this is something they wanted to be able to provide care for patients in their community, and they felt safe getting the vaccine. So that has not been one of the major sources of stress, although you know, the tension about taking care of unvaccinated patients versus vaccinated patients, that is always something that comes up in the national spotlight. That's not really anything that has been distressing here for me at the local level.
Okay, yeah, that's a different angle to that, Katie, as far as taking care of patients that some are vaccinated, some are not. Does that create any levels of frustration for you in doing your job?
I do certainly think that it can be frustrating to care for people who are quite sick that have chosen not to get vaccinated. With that being said, personally, I know that everybody has a choice, as hard as that may be, if they don't choose how you would like them to choose. But as a nurse, I signed up to care for everybody with care and compassion, and I'll continue to do that whether they're vaccinated or not.
Okay, and you also talked about how sometimes you're the one in the room with the patient. So yeah. Can you just share with us a little bit about, you know, are there sentiments that you often hear from patients that they express to you, or are you the one there at their, you know, lowest moments? You're the one that they have to turn to? What is that like?
It can be quite emotional at times. Certainly patients that do get diagnosed with COVID and test positive for COVID, they're in the hospital for a very long time without being able to see their friends or family. Certainly they can call them, but that's just not the same as having their hand held by the one that they love. Just to try and provide as much support as you can, let them talk about whatever they'd like to talk about. Sometimes it's the Red Sox game, or who won the football game the last night, or they want to talk about their favorite food or anything. You just try and find ways to make them smile, because when they're in a dark room with a loud machine all the time, you can easily go crazy, and that's not something you want to add when they're struggling.
Oh, well, so part of the care you give is being that surrogate family member. Well, thank you for sharing some of your experience, Katie. It is time to take a quick break, and I understand you need to get going. We know you have a lot on your plate, so thank you so much for the work that you do, and thanks for joining us today. Katie Weymouth is a registered nurse working in the telemetry unit at Northern Light Mercy Hospital. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Jackson Laboratory, hosting Science, Technology, and Society, a virtual event on October 19th. Visit jax.org/RSVP. There'll be a special briefing on the coronavirus by Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah this afternoon at 2. The live briefing will be available on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and on the Maine Public Facebook page. Today's briefing will also be archived on our website for later on-demand viewing. Once again, a special Maine CDC briefing with Dr. Shah today at 2 on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, and at MainePublic.org. Not only is Maine Public Television available free over the air, it's also streaming live at MainePublic.org. You can enjoy all of your favorite PBS and Maine Public Television programs, and even discover new favorites throughout the day. Check it out at MainePublic.org/MPTV. And if you're without internet, you can still access Maine Public's four television stations over the air with an HDTV antenna. To learn more about Maine Public Television over the air and for helpful information, information on choosing your antenna, please visit mainepublic.org. And remember that free access to Maine Public Television is made possible through the generous support of our members. Consider becoming a member today to help us deliver this great service to our neighbors throughout Maine, and thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the show, we are hearing what it's like for those working on the front lines in the hospital during the pandemic and how they are holding up. My guests are Christine Hine, emergency physician and chief wellness officer with Maine Medical Center. And now joining us for the rest of the show is Chris Laird. He's associate vice president of patient care services for Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. And he's a nurse who serves as a liaison for critical care, respiratory, education, and dialysis. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Share your comments and questions. Email talk at mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Chris, we've been talking a little bit. We talked earlier with Katie Weymouth about her day-to-day work, and you wear a lot of hats, so I wanted you to start by telling us about what your life has been like during this latest surge of the pandemic, and if it's different from the start of the pandemic last year.
So it is, the day-to-day is very stressful. I think some of the things that we do coming in as a leader is truly being there to support staff. I do wear many different hats, so trying to round on all of the units that I cover, as well as talking to the staff, talking to the leaders that are in those departments to see what are the key issues, what are the pain points, and how can we help support them to meet the challenges that we face on a day-to-day basis.
And I understand you're in and out of the ICU a lot. What are you seeing there with the extra surge in patients there?
I think the biggest thing that we're seeing right now, it is a lot of patients that are a lot sicker from what I have heard than through the previous surge. I recently started here, been here about 6 months within the organization, so I wasn't necessarily in this role throughout the first surge, but having seen it from a different vantage point in a different state, the patients that we are seeing on a day-to-day basis right now are much sicker than the patients that I have heard have been here, and also the patients that I was seeing personally at the beginning of the pandemic.
We talked earlier with both Katie and Christine about some degree of frustration that's in the air due to some patients being unvaccinated and that causing additional complications and challenges for those caring for them. Can you address that element of the stress and strain of your job?
I think being supportive of all the patients that we as
whoops, Chris, you're cutting in and out a little bit. I don't know if it would help if you move to a different location. To see if we get your connection.
Better?
Yeah, that sounds better, I think.
Okay. I think the as nurses, one of the biggest things that is our job is to care for the patients no matter where they're coming from or what their background is. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that we focus on is truly caring for the patients that we're seeing, providing that care and compassion as they come in. And everybody has that right to choose for themselves. But we definitely have seen a lot of patients who have that are unvaccinated that have been much sicker in compared to those individuals that are vaccinated.
Okay. Christine, I wanted to ask you, some states have actually turned to rationing care out of necessity. They have to prioritize patients based on certain factors like who's more likely to recover or other different measures. Can you talk about ethical questions that raises and whether that's something that it seems that it has not happened in Maine so far? There has not been that dire a need.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably something that was one of the biggest fears with the pandemic just starting, actually, for many healthcare workers, was how do you honestly work through that process. If you really break it down and think about what that means, it flies in the face of everything that we, our training and our desire to go into medicine in the first place was based upon. And that is to help everyone. As Jonathan and Katie talked about, we're not here to judge people's decisions and choices. We're here to take care of people in their time of need. So rationing care is an outcome that would be horribly impactful on our patients as well as on our teams. That's not, you can't ask another human to stand at the bedside and decide who receives care based on different demographics or different choices that may have contributed to them being there. It's just not something that is a tenable situation. So that's where the frustration with the larger national conversation and some of the fear and misinformation that's been spread about the vaccine is really deeply troubling. It's very personal for us. You know, we live and work in the communities that we are providing care in, and we're talking about our families and friends and neighbors who are in need of care, and we wouldn't ever want to be in a situation where we couldn't provide high quality care to anybody who comes through the door.
Chris, can you pick up on that? Just what's to be done then if there are staff shortages, which we've heard about, and all this just not enough hands to take care of the patients? If you're in that situation, what do you do then if you're not rationing care?
So currently, I wouldn't classify it as rationing care. I can say that being at Eastern Maine, we are a tertiary receiving facility. So there are often times that we have many patients that are waiting to come into the critical care area. One of the things that we do identify from that is the acuity of the patient, looking at how sick they are and who truly needs care and who is able and stable to wait and kind of defer that care. So I don't think that there's been any rationing of care from whether they're vaccinated or unvaccinated or anything from that standpoint. But one of the things that we do look at is the acuity of patients and what that need for patients coming in so that we are able to provide that care for the patients with the highest need.
And what then is the situation with non-COVID patients? And there, a lot of them also have pretty serious illness, and you're having to juggle between COVID patients and those with other medical problems. How does that work?
I think it's the same thing when we are looking at bed availability, when we're looking at patients coming in, we're looking at the acuity of the patient and who needs that care right now. And I think that that's whether they're COVID, non-COVID, vaccinated, unvaccinated. We have a group of providers within our transfer center that truly kind of look at and speak to facilities to say who is the sickest that needs to come in to get that care and who is able to kind of wait until we have space available.
What about then when it comes to the level of not as pressing non-COVID medical issues, Christine, things like preventive, you know, mammograms, screenings, or even things like a knee replacement that is not super urgent, but is definitely a problem. What happens when all of that, those kinds of medical issues are getting pushed off or delayed?
Well, those things are definitely being pushed off and delayed. And it has an impact on people's ability to access care. It has an impact on early diagnosis or prevention for primary care. This is kind of the downstream effect or the bottleneck effect of this. Where Chris is talking about bed shortages and staffing shortages, well, that's not just in the inpatient environment. That's also when you're trying to move patients who are admitted to the hospital out. Many patients who are admitted to the hospital can't go straight home. They need skilled rehab. They need nursing level of care. And there's facilities that have been closing, facilities that are struggling with staffing shortages and bed available on the outpatient side of things. So when you can't get people out of a hospital, you can't bring people in for these more semi-urgent or elective procedures. So there's this whole bottleneck that is created that is impacting people's ability to access care like they would have prior to the pandemic.
So even when the pandemic, whenever this this whole saga ends, is there going to are there likely to be repercussions from so many medical issues being pushed back later?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we have to expect that and anticipate it, and we have to think about how we're going to be able to staff for that and meet the need. We know that there were people who didn't seek care early in the pandemic because of fear about coming to the hospital and becoming infected with COVID. And now with people who can't seek this preventative care or early care, we're absolutely going to see an increased need. And it remains a question as to how we're going to meet that demand.
So that's yet another element that I would imagine is causing frustration among staff, just knowing that you're not being able to meet the demand and just feeling like you just, you know, spinning your wheels. Chris, how do you feel elements like that are affecting morale at the hospital?
I think it impacts morale. I think it causes to that increased stress and burnout within staff. Knowing that we have a waiting list of individuals that need to come into critical care, knowing that we have patients waiting outside of our facility to receive care in the acute care setting as well as within the critical care setting, it is part of our mission as an organization to be able to support our community and the outlying community. It definitely provides a level of stress for our staff, knowing that we're not able to meet all of the needs from everyone.
And are there some fixes or ways to make up for shorter staff? Are there any new ways you can do things to just kind of band-aid or, you know, just workarounds?
I think that we're always looking at how best to provide care. We look at where we're providing care within the organization and what units we're providing care. We've moved different levels of care throughout the organization to kind of expand our capacity and make sure that we are working to the utmost potential that we have. But I think that that's something that we evaluate on a daily basis with our incident command, looking at where the needs are and what we can do to address those.
Okay. And in this latest surge, who are you seeing? Are there more young people with COVID? Is it a different population in this recent uptick in cases?
I think we've definitely seen a younger population with the most recent variant. I think we've seen it has run the gamut. I've seen more pediatric patients throughout the Delta variant, as well as more patients that are in their 20s and 30s than it even small comparison to the first start of the pandemic.
Does that change anything in terms of what needs to be done for patients? Just the different demographics?
I think it's different demographics. It changes our planning on how we're planning for patients coming in. We have met many times to kind of anticipate what would happen if we do have a pediatric surge and we need to prepare for increased patients. So I think it's all stuff that we take into account as we're kind of planning for what's next, because I think that's the biggest thing with the pandemic is we don't know what's next. So we're always looking at early trends to kind of see where we're headed and to make sure that we can provide that very best care.
Sure. Okay. Well, we'll go to a call now. This is Susan calling from Lyman. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. If somebody has had COVID, is that not a good immunity to as compared to a shot or the vaccine?
Okay, Susan, our guests today are actually not here in a capacity to answer medical questions, personal medical questions, but I have a feeling they still can give you some information about that. Christine?
Yeah, Susan, thank you for calling. That's a really common question and concern that people kind of run up against when they've had a COVID infection and wondering what degree of immunity that gives them to a subsequent infection. And the answer is it does provide some protection for a short period of time, and then that immunity seems to wane pretty quickly. And the immunity isn't as strong as what we have been seeing with immunity from the vaccine. So the answer is, after you've had COVID, it's still advisable 14 days after you've recovered to get vaccinated. That will provide a much longer term and more robust immunity than the illness itself.
Okay, thanks for your question, Susan. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, your questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Panorama Organic, a U.S. producer of grass-finished beef and a proud partner of the National Audubon Society's Conservation Ranching Program, available at Hannaford, and by UMaine's Collins Center for the Arts, presenting the Ying Quartet on October 17th. Details at collinscenterforthearts.com.
I'm Scott Tong. For years, Nobel laureate Abdulrazak Gurna of Zanzibar has been writing about East Africa, colonialism, and cultural identity.
And I arrived in London not knowing right from left, confused by the large spaces and the hushed crowds. But I talked myself into feeling strong.
We speak with him next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us. Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. Your favorite Maine Public member benefit is getting better and bigger. Over the next year, Maine Public Passport is adding new shows and doubling the number of episodes for you to stream. From your favorite cooking and travel series to history specials and award-winning documentaries, stream your favorite shows and find new favorites on Maine Public Passport. To activate your Passport subscription, visit mainepublic.org/passport.
Maine Calling. We are talking with medical leaders about how healthcare workers are doing in the face of the ongoing pandemic. Joining me, Chris Laird with Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center and Christine Hine with Maine Medical Center. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. I know that one of you, I think Christine mentioned the uncertainty that is still in the air of not knowing when this will end, if there's going to be more. I'll ask you first, Chris, is there fear of a winter surge still coming? And is there a fear that we don't even know when the end is in sight? And is that affecting people as well?
Absolutely. I think there's a fear with knowing that we have COVID. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. We're doing the very best that we can to combat it. We're working on ensuring everybody can get vaccinated. But I think also compounding that with the possibility of a flu season, which we really didn't see last year with everybody masked. I think that that's also a contributing factor we may see this winter. So I think there is a lot of anticipation into what is coming.
Are either of you already, do you know that flu patients are coming in yet?
I haven't seen many flu patients. I know that we've had an early RSV season that's kind of started seeing some of those patients sooner than we normally would. But we are working on kind of promoting that flu shot as well. And we've already started flu clinics within the organization to help provide that boost for our staff.
Okay. And so... you're saying the difference is last year people were still more wearing masks and distancing, and that kept the flu down, but that's not as prevalent now.
Not from what I'm seeing currently outside in the community. Just going to the store, we have a lot of people who aren't wearing masks. We have a lot of people that are now getting back together, and I think that that may have an impact on our flu season this year.
Okay, this is Maine Calling. We're talking about how healthcare workers are faring at this stage in the pandemic. You can always join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can still send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling.
post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. We do have an email from a nurse in Portland, and this is a long one, but a lot to say here, and I will go ahead and read it. I want to cry and laugh at what I am hearing. I have been a nurse in Maine for a long time, and the mandate is 100% affecting my unit at Maine Medical Center. Colleagues and friends who have worked side by side for years are having to say goodbye to some of the best staff we have. We are already short-staffed and have been getting calls to come in extra nearly every day. We often work 12-hour shifts with no lunch break and no ability to step away from our work. We are beyond fatigued. The high level of professionalism and knowledge that our team members have is the only reason we have not had more sentinel events. I do agree that it is imperative to help and encourage staff to take lunch breaks, offer shorter shifts, hire more ancillary staff, pay the workers more, give more time for respite. It has been heartbreaking to work through this and see that politics on so many levels has invaded the care we are able to provide. And it does go on quite a bit longer. Christine, again, I mean, she acknowledges there are things you can do to alleviate the strain, but that a lot of it is coming from the issue with the vaccine mandate. And again, you said you haven't observed a lot of that, but I guess there is some of that out there.
No, I haven't observed the vaccine mandate, but what I have observed is people leaving and choosing to do something else because of the situation with COVID and trying to provide care that doesn't feel like the care that you set out to give to patients. So I hear that in that email, and I recognize the level of distress, and I do not disagree with it. I think that we are at a really critical inflection point in terms of managing this and still having resources to care for everybody who comes to the hospital. So, and that's not unique to our organization. That is being seen across the country.
Okay, and Chris, you joined our conversation a little after Katie was on talking about what it's like for her. And she talked about the physically and emotionally taxing parts of her job. And I'm wondering if you can give us some more specifics of what you see as really making this so difficult.
I can say in our COVID ICU, some of the things that I've identified as truly being difficult is the acuity of the patients that we're caring for. That in conjunction with the high mortality rate that I've seen with this variant through the pandemic, I think that at one point in time we went multiple days with patients who are passing, and it's supporting the team through those changes while the team is supporting the families and their loved ones and the patients that we have. I think that stress and burnout is also caused from kind of that support. As nurses, we give so much on a daily basis to care for the patients that we have, to support their families through that grieving process as everything goes through. Not having families at the bedside is also a strain because we're trying to provide that communication, whether it's on the phone, whether it's through Zoom. I think there's a lot of pieces that impact that stress on our nurses on a daily basis. Not being able to provide the care for all of the patients that are waiting to come in, proning patients, which takes a lot of hands to kind of go through and physically turn patients as we're going through and caring for them. I think there's a lot of factors that kind of impact that burnout and stress.
Can you explain proning, since that is a very specific aspect of caring for COVID patients that people may not have seen or heard of?
When patients are unable to oxygenate appropriately, we actually take them from a supine position, which is laying on their back, and we prone them. So we basically turn them to where they're laying on their belly. It helps to improve some of the oxygenation, but it takes a lot of manpower for somebody who is intubated and paralyzed and can't move on their own to safely transition a patient from a supine to a prone position. It truly takes a lot of help and support to kind of manage those patients.
Okay, and one thing I'm wondering, we hear a lot about people in their last moments or in a very difficult period of their illness expressing regret or expressing something they wish to tell others, and oftentimes this is about vaccinations. Is that something you're observing?
We have had individuals who, prior to getting intubated, when we're actually putting them on a breathing machine, that has said that they wished that they were able to get vaccinated beforehand. So I think that that is something that we have heard. When they are passing, a lot of times these patients are so critically ill that they're really not talking to us at that point in time. Because a lot of them are being mechanically ventilated.
Okay. And Christine, you have more to say about those with this kind of severe illness.
Yeah. Talk about the fear that people have, not just when they're severely ill, but fear is a normal human emotion to many new experiences. And so understanding that there's fear and vaccine hesitancy built into the process of making that choice, I think that one thing that we've seen is that people's risk tolerance significantly decreases when somebody they know has been severely ill with COVID. And you see that vaccine rates increase in a community after there's been a local outbreak. So there's something about bringing it into that personal sphere that makes it a little more understandable, and people start to have a different outcome when they weigh the risks and benefits. You know, Chris is talking about the severity of illness that we're seeing right now. As of yesterday morning, a third of the patients that are hospitalized with COVID in Maine are hospitalized in the intensive care units throughout the state. That's an extraordinarily high morbidity for a virus to carry. And of those patients who are hospitalized, 20% of them are on ventilators right now, not unable to breathe for themselves. So the Delta variant, which is the predominant variant that we're seeing across the country right now, carries a very high morbidity and mortality. And it's not just about whether you survive it, because if you do survive it, there's a very good chance, if you've had severe illness, that you may be oxygen dependent for a period of time or indefinitely, and have pretty significant respiratory illness that you're now having to manage as a chronic condition moving forward.
Okay, well, thank you for that reality check. I do think people did get complacent over the summer and need to understand how bad this variant has been. We're going now to Carrie from East Winthrop. Hi, Carrie. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just briefly, I just wanted to say I'm a nurse in the hospice field, and I've been in the healthcare business for over 30 years. I completely stand behind the nurse who gave you the email from Portland. You know, we are already in a crisis of short staff, and we're about to get a tsunami of the perfect storm, losing more people because of this mandate. I really wish that the country as a whole would consider those who don't wish to have the vaccine, wear a mask every day, wear an N95 mask every day, get tested every day, get tested for COVID every day. It's going to be a cost savings just to do that. Instead of, tearing down and tiring out and, all the staff who are left behind. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts, Carrie. And I do want to mention that we know that this question of vaccine mandates, whether in healthcare or in business or in other fields, is a huge national issue right now. And we are hoping to address that on a show coming up later this month. So thank you for sharing your thoughts, Carrie. And I was going to go to somebody else, but I'll ask you, Chris, just in terms of Christine has already talked about some of the ways to help that they're utilizing at Maine Medical Center. Can you share also any tools, resources that people in the hospital who are just burnt out can turn to?
I think several of the opportunities that we have within the organization is our employee assistance program. We attempt to do critical incident stress debriefings. We're actually setting up monthly just open debriefings for individuals to come in and talk. I think that with burnout and stress, one of the biggest things as a healthcare provider is to be able to recognize it. recognize the impact, and then speak about it, talk about it, have discussions about how it's impacting and what we can do. A lot of what we're trying to do is talk to our providers, because it's at nursing, it's at every level, from our respiratory therapists to our physicians, to our environmental services coming in, social work. We have so many individuals that are impacted by the stress and burnout of what's happening within healthcare, specifically related to COVID, to the vaccine mandate, everything that's happening. So being able to discuss it and providing support, I think that's one of the biggest things that I try to work with my leaders, is to be able to hear what those concerns are and support them. Individuals that are having hesitancy for the vaccine, is being able to hear those concerns and supporting them, or supporting the decision, whichever way that individual tries to go, but providing them with as much information and knowledge to know, so they are able to make that informed consent form. We've offered that, having anyone who has hesitations to be able to speak to any of the senior executives in the organization as well as many of our providers, to kind of understand where their hesitancy is coming from, and if we have any opportunities to support them through that. And I think also working with individuals, we are working short-staffed. We do have a lot of people that are working many hours, so as much as we can, trying to protect some of that work-life balance as much as possible as well.
Okay, thanks for letting us know about that. And we will now go to Michelle calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Quick question. I'm not sure if this applies to Maine Medical Center or all hospitals in the state of Maine, but questioning why patients presenting to the emergency department, if they request one, are not able to receive a COVID vaccination through the emergency department.
Christine, that's a question for you.
We've been working on moving towards being able to do that. That's going to require staffing considerations that are pretty impactful when we're already working on short-staffed units. So it's absolutely something that we would like to be able to do. We have to make appointments for patients right at the bedside when they're talking about it with us, and they would like to be vaccinated. We've been able to do that as planning for discharge for them. But to actually operationalize that in our emergency department, specifically at Maine Med, we haven't been able to do that yet. And a lot of it is dependent on staffing.
Okay. And thanks for your call, Michelle. That has to be the last call for the day. Thank you both for joining us during this very busy time at the hospitals. Christine Hine is an emergency physician and chief wellness officer with Maine Medical Center. And Chris Laird is associate vice president of patient services for Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center, and he's a liaison for critical care, respiratory education, and dialysis. Today's sound engineer was Keiji Akinmuladun. This show will repeat tonight at 7. Tomorrow on the program, bystander intervention. We'll learn when and how to act in the face of harassment and discriminatory behavior. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.